Welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Get in on the conversation. Call 1-877-669-1292.
And I'm Howie Silbiger. Welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show right here on the True Talk Radio Network. I appreciate you joining me. I'm happy to be here. And I know that this is going to be a great show. I'm under the impression right now, and this has been my impression for quite a while already, that the world has gone completely insane, that we have totally lost any semblance of morality. We have lost any semblance of reality. We have even lost any semblance of normalcy. It doesn't exist anymore. When we take a look around the world and we see what's going on and we take a look at the things that are happening around the world, and we've spoken about a lot of them on the show, we realize that what was once normal doesn't exist anymore. What was once a sane, rational, loving society, at least in North America, has disappeared, doesn't exist. And what we're stuck with is this radical, polarized society that allows for the craziest stuff to happen. Men pretending to be women who have to be accepted as women, women pretending to be men who have to be accepted as men. The whole idea that the victim is now the oppressor and the oppressor is the victim. I don't know. The whole thing is insane. And it has manifested itself in a way that allows you to look at major events happening around the world, such as the war between Gaza and Israel, and realize that the hatred, the underlying hatred of Jews, still exists, no matter how woke and how crazy society gets. You see, society is now based on levels of victimhood. And the more victim you are, the better it is for you. So it started off with affirmative action for black people. You hire them based on their skin color, which apparently wasn't racist. Apparently not hiring someone based on their skin color is racist. But hiring someone based on their skin color is not racist. I don't know. I've never been able to differentiate that. And then the lefties tell me that you can't be racist against white people because white people were racist for so many years that racism against white people doesn't exist. So this is what the lefties tell me now. And then I hear that you can't be a victim if you're the oppressor. And you can't be an oppressor if you're a victim. Two things should have nothing to do with each other, but yet this is what I'm told. And all these rules that you can't even keep up with get thrown out the window when it comes to the Arab-Israel conflict. The second Jews get involved in this, everything that we know, everything that we understand in regards to the way the world is run, in the way morality in the world is run, in the way the world views victims and views oppressors, gets thrown out the window. And we end up in a vortex of strangeness, of really weirdness. And that's really where we're living right now. Yesterday, the House of Commons of Canada, the Canadian Parliament, had to vote on a non-binding resolution put forth by the New Democratic Party. The idea behind the non-binding resolution was that more support has to be sent to Gaza, that there's a humanitarian crisis in Gaza, and more support has to be sent to Gaza. And for some reason, the aid that is going to Gaza, the billions and billions of dollars that are being sent in aid to Gaza, are not getting to the citizens. This is somehow Israel's fault. And the resolution blamed Israel for the lack of aid in Gaza, blamed Israel for a Gazan blockade, and called for Canada to recognize a Palestinian state. Whoa, one second here. Everybody knows, everybody who's following the situation at least knows, that there was no war in Gaza. The Gazan war did not exist before October 7th. Everybody in Israel and everybody around the world knows that the war in Gaza was started by Hamas, which was the democratically elected government of the Palestinian Authority. So the democratically elected government of Judea and Samaria, the Arab areas of Judea and Samaria, and of Gaza. We all know that the attack killed over 1,200 Jews in one day in southern Israel. We all know that the government of Gaza, Hamas, the elected government of Gaza, the democratically elected government of Gaza, if you take a look, you look it up, you know it was democratic election. Jimmy Carter, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, he actually supervised that election, so we know that it was a democratic election. That the democratically elected government of Gaza, Hamas, launched a war against Israel. Took hostages. Took soldiers. Took children. Took old people as hostages. We know they killed over 1,200 people on one day. So, if we want to put fault on where the war started, nobody could argue that Israel started the war with Hamas. That's not true. Now, if you want to go back before October 7th and you want to argue that Israel was oppressing the Gazans before October 7th, just keep in mind, for the last 17 years, maybe even more, probably 19 or 20 years, rockets have been flying into southern Israel, into civilian neighborhoods of southern Israel. Now, the world didn't seem to care about that. Didn't care about Sderot and bombs landing on the heads of citizens in Sderot. Didn't care about a full generation of Israeli children who had to be raised to know that the second that siren sounds, they have 5 seconds to get into a bomb shelter. Full generations of Israeli children in southern Israel who were raised living in bomb shelters because bombs were raining on their heads day and night. Nobody seemed to care about that. Where was UNICEF? Where was the UN? Where was anybody? Nobody cared. So Jewish life was cheap. Jewish life nobody cared about. It was okay to throw bombs onto innocent Jewish civilians, something that's called a war crime today, something that South Africa, out of all states, brought Israel up to the criminal court of justice. But nobody seemed to care that Hamas was lobbing bombs into Israel before October 7th, for years, decades before October 7th. Nobody gave a damn. Then along came October 7th. Hamas came into Israel, murdered over 1,200 people in the most brutal way possible, raped men, women, and children, raped animals, murdered people, burned families alive, put babies into ovens, decapitated babies, butchered bodies so badly they still not identified. What was Israel supposed to do? Was Israel supposed to sit back and relax and say, oh, okay, they killed over 1,000 of our civilians. They took 300 people hostage, over 300 people. Now we're just going to sit back and allow this to happen? Is that what Israel was supposed to do? Is that what the world expected Israel to do? Is that what the world expected? That we're going to accept, that Israel's going to accept a massacre like that? And just close their eyes and pretend it didn't happen? I don't know. I don't know what kind of crazy world we're living in that would think that. So Israel did what any normal country would do. They went to get their captives. They went to get the hostages. And they went to destroy the threat. The threat that is Hamas. Now, many will argue that it wasn't proportional. But what does proportional mean? What is proportional? Do we count up the bodies and rape as many women as were raped in Israel? Do we mutilate as many people as they mutilated? Do we burn as many families as they burned? What is proportional? In war, there is no proportionality. It's a ridiculous concept. In war, you fight until the enemy surrenders or is killed. That's it. That's what war is. And war is hell. And people die in wars. And collateral damage happens in wars. And innocent people unfortunately die in war. They didn't ask for it. Their government did. And this war could end tomorrow if Hamas laid down their weapons and surrendered and released all the hostages. This war is over. But that's not happening. Negotiated settlement Canada called for in this resolution. A two-state solution. How could there possibly be a two-state solution? Someone explain that to me. You feel free to call in. If you want, 1-877-669-1292, you can explain to me how a two-state solution will work in this situation, or in any situation now, after October 7th. Is Israel supposed to recognize a Palestinian state that is going to be armed and ready to attack them at any given second? This has been the history of the Middle East. That any time there's a peace deal, any time there's a signature, they get attacked within months. Is that what Israel's supposed to do? Just ignore history? If we don't remember history, we're bound to live it again. Israel remembers its history and remembers it well. So is that what Israel's supposed to do? Just forget history and just keep hoping and praying that the ceasefire or this peace treaty will work? Or does Israel have the obligation, which I think they do, to complete their mission and eradicate Hamas? Now, Canada condemns Israel. It's nothing new. Canada's been condemning Israel for years, voting against Israel in the UN, condemning Israel for years. You have a handful, not even a handful, of Canadian parliamentarians who stand up for Israel. Anthony Housefather got up. He's a liberal. I don't know why he's still in the Liberal Party, but he's a liberal. And he got up and he said, he declared he's a Zionist. Good for you. It's great to make a declaration. Great for everyone to say, rah, 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 Anthony Housefather, yay. He said he's a Zionist in Parliament. At the end of the day, his party passed this resolution. At the end of the day, even with the modifications, the resolution is a damning condemnation of Israel. And a call for a negotiated settlement to this war and the creation of a Palestinian state. At the end of the day, Canada sided with Hamas. How many liberals side with Hamas? How many liberals are backing the Hamas? We see Hamas backers everywhere. Everywhere in North America. In Canada, we've been seeing them more and more getting up and protesting, yelling from the river to the sea, yelling death to the Jews, calling for the eradication of Israel. And we see the inaction of our politicians, the inaction of our leadership, the total ignoring of this call for the genocide of the people, of Jewish people. There was another protest just a couple of days ago in front of a synagogue. An IDF soldier was speaking at a synagogue, or a former IDF soldier, and a handful of, a little more than a handful of Arabs came to protest. And they stood in front of the synagogue yelling, Intifada, Intifada is the only solution. Now, for those of you too young to remember what an Intifada is, let me explain it to you. Just so you understand what they're talking about when they yell, Intifada, Intifada is the only solution. An intifada is a popular uprising. That's the definition of the term intifada. It's been used quite a few times in Israel. There are two major ones. Each major one killed hundreds of Jews in unprovoked terror attacks such as blowing up shopping malls, blowing up pizza parlors, ice cream shops, and buses, killing men, women, and children indiscriminately. This is what Intifada is. So when these people are standing and yelling, Intifada, we need an Intifada in North America, what they are calling for is the indiscriminate attack on the Jewish population of North America. Now, what the Jewish population has to do with Israel is beyond me. Just because Israel is the Jewish state doesn't mean that all Jews are free targets. But you have to understand. And this is where it does not get complicated at all. Normally, I would say this is where it gets complicated, but this does not get complicated at all because they've laid it out very clearly. If you look at the Hamas Charter clearly says that all Jews anywhere in the world must be destroyed, that Jews must be killed wherever they live. So when you see Hamas supporters, when you see these people standing and calling for an intifada in North America, calling for the destruction of the Jewish population in North America. These are undoubtedly Hamas supporters. They can't be anything else. And they mean it. You know, we like to think it's political rhetoric. We listen to the politicians and say, yeah, they say horrible things, but they're not going to carry it out. It's not true. They say horrible, horrible things, and they will carry it out. I always believe my enemies when they say they want to kill me. I never doubt them. Why would they lie to me? Why would they say, I want to kill you and not want to kill me? Why would they say, I want to eradicate Israel from the river to the sea? Palestine will be free. Throw Israel into the sea. Why would they say that and not mean it? It's not political rhetoric. It's not just idle chatter. It is a mantra. It is a philosophy. It is a religion. It is a cult, a death cult. And that's what they want to do. They want to destroy Israel and destroy the Jews wherever they live. That is what Hamas has said they want to do. And that is what their supporters in Israel, in Gaza, and in North America intend to do. And if they had the power, they would do it right now. A man was killed at a rally in San Francisco not long ago. He was killed. He was hit in the head and murdered at this rally because he held up an Israeli flag. This is what they intend to do. The rallies don't get violent for no reason. The police don't have to hold them back. And if they get a hold of a Jew, they don't beat that Jew for no reason. They're sending the message that Jews are not safe on the streets, not in North America, not in Israel, not in Gaza, nowhere. And anywhere a Jew goes, a Jew has to look behind their backs. And the Jewish population is reacting to it in the most obscene way. They're building fortresses and increasing security and spending tens of millions of dollars to protect their population. I guess that's something they have to do. We have to protect the population. But it is the government's responsibility. Every North American government has the responsibility. Every government that's a democratic country has the responsibility to protect their citizenship. And if there is a segment of the population that is calling for the murder of another segment of the population, well then, I don't care what you want to call it. You want to call it Islamophobia, you want to call it whatever you want to call it. I couldn't care less what you call it. It has to be taken care of. But everyone's too afraid to do anything. They're afraid of labels. I couldn't care less about labels. You have to save the population. So if there's one segment of the population saying, we're going to kill the other segment of the population, my God, stand in. Do something about it. Ignoring it is not going to make it go away. It's just going to fester and fester and fester until it blows up. We've seen this before. In the early 90s, after the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, America took all their resources and threw them into looking at the Islamic threat in North America. And they did that, and the FBI stopped following other people, such as white supremacists and other haters that lived in North America. And they stopped following those people. And they focused their entire attention on Islamic hate, which probably wasn't a bad idea, but really wasn't a good idea. And so what happened was the white supremacist movement decided that they were going to use that time to rebuild their arsenals and to rebuild and to recruit people. And that's what they did. And then in 1995, white supremacist Timothy McVeigh blew up a federal building in Oklahoma City. That was an attack by white supremacists. Now, the white supremacists had risen up. This is it. There was an attack by a white supremacist in 1995, 2 years after the World Trade Center bombing. In 1993, in 95, there's an attack by white supremacists. Only because they were being tracked by the FBI, and now suddenly they weren't being tracked by the FBI. And then after 2001, after 9/11, the same thing happened again. The FBI, the CIA, everybody focused on the Islamic threat and ignored the white supremacist threat. And what do we see? We see thousands and thousands and thousands of white supremacists going out to Charlottetown and having They went to Charlottesville and they had a rally with tiki torches. This is what happens. So if you ignore the threat, it doesn't go away. It festers and it grows. And it festers and it grows and it grows and it grows until it becomes unmanageable. And we're at that point now with radical Islamists, radical jihadists, who are taking to the street right across North America and yelling and screaming and calling for the death of Jews. It's not only in North America, it's happening around the world, but we'll just talk about North America. But we can talk about Australia if you want, where they stood in front of the Sydney Opera House yelling "Gaz to Jews." You could talk about New York Times Square in New York, where multiple times thousands of pro-Hamas Arabs stood in Times Square holding up swastikas. If that's not a clear indication of what they want to do, Jews, I'm not sure what is. You could talk about Montreal, where in downtown Montreal, not only were they yelling "Itbach el Yehud," which means "slaughter the Jew," they yell it in Arabic because they don't think anybody could understand it. But they were also yelling from the river to the sea, which calls for the annihilation of Israel and the destruction of everything in between. And yet, the governments sit back and do nothing. They sit back and quietly. The Canadian government did not pass a resolution calling for the release of hostages that Hamas took. Innocent men, women, and children that are being held by Hamas, a terror group. Didn't call for that. The Canadian government took over a week to condemn the attack on Israeli civilians, the October 11th attack. It took almost a week for Israel to admit that it actually happened. It took over a week for Israel, for Canada, to even acknowledge the fact that 1,200 people, and even that, they still question the number. So why are we surprised that this Liberal government under Justin Trudeau would pass a resolution put forth by the New Democratic Party condemning Israel again? I'm very curious, and nobody's been able to explain this to me. I'm actually really curious why nobody talks about Egypt's border with Gaza. The only focus is always on Israel's border. Why can't more aid go through Israel's border? Why is Israel having a blockade? You know, the blockade could be over in a second, in a millisecond, if Egypt opened up their border. But you know what Egypt did? And you can look this up. If you don't believe me, look it up. Please, please, look it up. Egypt, after October 7th, said, we don't want the Gazans to come into Egypt. They closed the Rafah border. They closed their border completely. It was open a little bit. Now it's closed completely. And they built a border wall taller than Donald Trump's border wall with Mexico. And they built it right along the entire border of Egypt and Gaza. And they put men on top of the border wall with guns and said, if anybody wants to cross the border wall, we're going to shoot you. Wait a second. Israel builds a border wall and says, listen, this is a security fence. We don't want any more terror attacks in our country. And they're called an apartheid state, because they built a security fence which cut down terrorism in their country by almost 90%. And they're called an apartheid state. Egypt could build a border wall with barbed wire on the top and armed guards standing on top of the wall. And the world doesn't say a word demanding that Egypt open up their border for Gazan refugees? Well, if Egypt opened up their border for Gazan refugees, then the world wouldn't be able to condemn Israel, would they now? And the world would not be able to look at Israel and say, you're an oppressor, you're worse than the Nazis. They wouldn't be able to do that to the Jews if Egypt opened up their wall, if Egypt opened up their border. Then they wouldn't have a problem with Israel. They couldn't talk about their problem with Israel. See, that's the thing. The thing is that Israel's a country that has the entire deck stacked against them continuously. And I'm glad that They've decided that they don't care what the world thinks. They're going to take care of their problem. It's about time. It took them 70 years to get to this point, but it's about time that they got to this point. Last week, Chuck Schumer, and I love this because, I mean, this guy wouldn't know he was Jewish if Judaism bit him in the butt. But Chuck Schumer, the most senior Jewish senator in the United States Senate, called for the removal of Bibi Netanyahu as Prime Minister of Israel. What? Hold on a second. Is this the same Chuck Schumer that spent 5 years arguing that Donald Trump was being propped up by Russia and that there was election interference in America and that there should never be election interference in a democratic country? Is this the same guy? Same guy who was screaming about Russia interfering with American elections is now trying to interfere with Israeli elections? Huh. Remember a couple of years ago, Obama tried to do that too? Tried to get rid of Bibi? Tried to interfere with the elections? Look, I'm no big fan of Bibi Netanyahu. I'm really not. And I've made it clear on the show that I'm really not a fan of Bibi Netanyahu. But I'm really not a fan of foreign election interference either. If it's not good for America, it's not good for Israel. And if you don't want foreign interference in your election, don't try to interfere in somebody else's. So what do we do as citizens? What do we do now that our Canadian government, if we're Canadians, what do we do now that our Canadian government has decided to back Hamas? And that the Jews that stand up and fight for Jews in Parliament haven't left this party. So they're tactfully supporting the party. What do we do now? What do we do with this government? They're a minority government. They're only being propped up by the NDP. Could we make the government fall? Of course not, because as citizens, we don't have that right. Are our MPs going to do it? Well, if the Jewish MPs, the ones who claim to be Zionists, decide to leave the party, then the party would not have enough seats. If enough of them left, the party wouldn't have enough seats to maintain a government. The government would fall. But that's not going to happen either. Because politics makes strange bedfellows. And apparently the Jews that are part of this party, and they're going to say that this is unfair of me to say, but it's the truth. Otherwise, they would have left the party a while ago. The Jews that are part of this party care more about their political careers than they care about standing up for what's right. And although they may give lip service and claim to be standing up for what's right, and may appear to be standing up for what's right, right now, after the Liberal Party passed this resolution, just the fact they entertained it's not one thing, but after they passed it, and these Jewish MPs who claim to be Zionists, and these Jewish MPs who claim to stand for Israel, these Jewish MPs who voted against this resolution, should now make the ultimate sacrifice and step away from their party. Take the seats away from the party, force the government to fall and go to election. The reason they're not doing that, and this is the only reason they're not doing that, it's because they're afraid they're not going to be reelected because their riding is a majority Jewish and their party backs Hamas. I'm Howie Silberger. Thank you so much for joining me. I will see you again next time here on the Howie Silberger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Thank you so much.